Exempt Chapter 1.
My future begins today. It will be whatever I make it tomorrow. I look forward to new things, new people, and certainly new opportunities, but not without a little reservation as I head into the unknown. It was a beautiful, brisk autumn morning this Monday of August 21, 1960, as I approached the house I would spend a considerable amount of my time during the next 2 to 3 years. This is my first trip to New Haven, Connecticut. So I took my time, driving up from Wake Forest, North Carolina, in the yellow 1955 Chevrolet convertible my father gave me upon graduation from high school. Uncle Stan, what I call him, is not related, but he and my father are close friends and gave me directions to the house he arranged for me to live in. He said, "Drive up US 1 to Church Street. In New Haven, turn left and continue. Church Street becomes Whitney at Grove, until Trumbull, turn right to Lincoln, turn left to the corner of Bradley, number 18 on the left." I left Wake Forest at 7 a.m., Saturday morning, the 19th of August, intending to visit a family friend, Morris Bechtel, in Philadelphia, before going to New Haven. Morris is a good friend of the family, he frequently said. "Dickie, before you start college, come up and visit the family cottage outside of Philadelphia. His family is a major benefactor of Duke. I am certain his vision of a family cottage would not be mine. Why do people continue to call me Dickie? My name is Richard. It irritates me. But I never say so. Darn it. I am no longer 12, but 20 years old. Sure wish they would leave off the childish nickname." The drive up US 1 to Philadelphia is estimated to be about 8 hours. I told Morris to expect me around 5 p.m. I need to pick up US 1. Once on the highway north, I have plenty of time to think. In North Carolina, there is one thing we have an abundance of: trees. There is not much interesting to see between Wake Forest and Richmond, only more trees. The traffic is light this Saturday morning, except trucks, which are a continuous convoy to somewhere. My heart is pounding as I leave Wake Forest. I am on my way. On my way to where? This seems like a journey into the unknown. It is a journey I had not planned or envisioned. Someone is pulling the strings on my life, who or why I do not know. The one thing I am certain of is, nothing is as it seems. I am 20 years old, with less than 2 years of undergrad school, heading off to Yale Law School. I never wanted to be a lawyer. I did not apply to Yale, either the college or law school, so how is it I have in my hand a letter of acceptance? Yale Law is the most difficult law school in the nation to be admitted to. They only admit 200 new students a year. Every applicant is screened by the admissions department. The small number of applicants they select must go through an even tougher trial. They are tested by 3 different members of the faculty who score each applicant with a grade. 4 is the highest grade. Only those with a perfect 12 score are admitted. There are also 50 to 80 outstanding students admitted each year that do not have to go through this screening process. Those are exempt. I suppose someone must feel, "I am an outstanding student. I did not consider myself such." What does it mean to be outstanding? The word outstanding leaves it open to interpretation by whoever has the power to make that determination. Grades-wise, I have done well in all my years, in junior high, senior high, and my short time at Duke. My father considered a B to be a failing grade. He is a person you listen to, intently, if you want peace. I only received 1 B in the last 6 years. School is easy once you understand the code. They grade mostly on test scores. Tests are simple. The questions are obvious when you read the texts. They always ask the same nonsensical questions: what date did this happen, where such and such are located, who did what, and when. The only important question that never seems to get asked is why. When preparing for any exam, I would scan the text looking for questions that would be on the exam. This is not difficult once you understand their system. Thinking back now, perhaps the reason I did well in school is due to my father, Walter. He is a Methodist minister, pastor of the church in Wake Forest, where I spent 3 days every week regardless of my wishes. Father does not believe in wasting time. He had a library built as an addition to our house, and it is full 30 large shelves of books. He expected me to read each and every book in that room. Up until high school, I spent many hours in the library. Father was appointed to the General Conference of the Methodist Church when I was in middle school at 12 years of age. He is now traveling more, and that certainly helps my social life. Even when Father is out of town, he has the warden, my mother, Marion, there to watch over me. She is as strict as father, perhaps more so, if that is possible. Good gosh, almost 12 p.m. I need to stop for gas and food. My stomach has been calling me for over an hour. I am past Richmond heading to D.C. Ashland is ahead. I will stop for gas and fill my own tank. Cost me $4.25 to fill up the car with gas and another 85 cents to fill my stomach. I left for school with $300 from the family and another $120 I put away. Father gave me an American Express card with the proviso that it should be used only in an emergency. No more stops until I reach Philadelphia and Morris. Should only take me about 4.5 hours. I am still on schedule. Leaving the maze of Philadelphia, continuing on US 1 North, I found the turnoff Morris told me to take and drove east to State Street, which follows along the banks of the Delaware River. The cottage is not difficult to find as the properties out here are as large as city parks. As I turned into the driveway, no, it is a street. I could see about a half mile down a large house. As I got closer, this is not a house, but an estate that looks larger than the White House in D.C. 4 Greek columns graced the front entry. The main house appeared to have 30 or more rooms I determined from the front entry. The property is surrounded by lush gardens and a myriad of tree-lined paths. Even though it is fall, the leaves have turned color and are falling. Everything looks untouched. I see not one leaf on the ground. They must have a staff of 10 or more to care for the grounds. This place is so imposing, even kings would blush with envy. I am not envious, only somewhat concerned. Who are these people and why am I here? Rushed through my mind. The front door opened and out came a man dressed in formal butler attire. "Mr. Morris is expecting you," he said. "Please follow me." He led me into the study. Morris is not there, so I looked around. The room is grand, if somewhat stuffy. 2 large picture windows are centered by a large portrait of someone I assume important. The center of the room has a large fireplace with another imposing portrait hanging over it. Glass doors on either side of the fireplace leading to a dining room. The room is impressive, but not a place to spend with your chums from school. Warm, but too formal for my taste. I am peeking at pictures on lamp tables under the windows.
"Dicky," Morris startled me, saying, "glad you could come. Do you have a bag to bring in?"
"Yes," I said, "in the back seat of the car."
"Come on, let me show you to your room. You're planning to spend the night, right?"
"Of course. How often do I get to stay in a palace?" Morris took me upstairs to a long hallway leading to a room overlooking the Delaware River, the banks of which are right in the backyard of the estate. I drew the curtains, looking out onto the most unbelievable scene I in my young life witnessed. I could see off to my right the porch, if it can be called such. There are at least 8 massive Grecian columns, they appear to be marble, surrounding the porch, that support a terrace above. Each column looks to be 30 feet high and about 12 feet around. This overlooks manicured grass lawns extending to the bank of the river. The entire rear yard is hemmed by large pine trees. I could imagine what fun it would be to hold a football game here. It is large enough to accommodate the entire Duke squad. I wonder if any of them have ever been invited here.
"Dicky, the family is not in town today, so I thought we might enjoy dinner on the porch. Did you bring a jacket that gets a little chilly once the sun sets?"
"Sure. Mine is the car. I will get it."
"Your bag is on the way up now. Why don't you freshen up from your drive and come down at about 6:30 p.m.?
As soon as Morris left, I jumped onto the soft-looking poster bed, looking around the room. Why am I here? This place is larger than the Grand Hotel, and it looks like it is only Morris and I. There is only one staff member, the butler. Why did he bring me to this place? Morris never behaved like one who needed or wanted to show off. Just the opposite. Whenever he was at our house, he played the piano, listened to jazz, which is the only music my father cares for, and spent hours talking to father. He acted very mellow. Here he seems a little stiff. Anyway, I am curious and will find out soon enough. Wearing my dark blue Duke blazer over a white turtleneck and my best pair of khakis, I descended the stairs. Butler Joe, not aware of his name, he did not offer, nor did I ask, is waiting to take me out to the porch. Morris is sitting at a round table covered with a white linen tablecloth. Not a wrinkle in that fabric. The table is set for 2, however, there are 4 chairs. I wondered if someone else was coming later. The glistening white china is rimmed in gold. The silver, certainly not plated, but solid sterling. There is a baccarat crystal decanter in the center, and baccarat crystal goblets beside each plate.
Hi, Dickie, come sit. A beautiful evening, isn't it? As Morris reached for the decanter to pour me something of whatever is inside.
I held my hand up as if to say no, thank you.
He smiled and said, I forgot, Dickie, you do not drink alcohol, do you? You are not home now. You are a man headed off to conquer the world. It is time to learn and experience new things, new people, and new ideas. From this day, everything will be new for you. So let me pour you a taste of this excellent Bordeaux. Raise our glass to your journey.
The wine is extraordinary. I did not tell Morris, but this is not my first glass of wine or other alcoholic beverage. Father always told me that what I do, what others see me do, can either harm or help them in their life with Christ. He said, Richard, you must live your life as others expect from a Christian leader. If they see you intoxicated or acting unruly, then everything we have told them is a lie. We would be looked upon as hypocrites. Be upstanding in all you do. Be a model for all. Let them see the love of Christ through you. I can say this with all sincerity. My father never once spoke a foul word. He did nothing I could say was inappropriate. He was firm, but a father must be to guide his child. Dinner is good. We started out with crab bisque served with hot, fresh baked rolls. Joe, as I call him, brought out a plate with a fish fillet, assorted green vegetables, and boiled baby red potatoes served with butter and sour cream sauce. This is the way I enjoy eating. Good, simple, healthy foods, properly prepared, can be a feast to the body and a comfort to the soul. The conversation at dinner is cordial, simple small talk only meant to make everyone comfortable, but without substance. I am still trying to understand why I am here. Joe came and asked about the dessert. I said, none for me, thank you.
It is starting to get a little cold with a breeze coming in from the river. Let's go inside by the fire.
Great idea, I said. I am ready for warmth. I followed Morris into the library where Joe had a roaring fire. We pulled up chairs on each side of the fireplace. I rubbed my hands to soak the warmth into my body. Joe brought in a tray with two glasses of port wine. Morris looked at me with a warm grin and said,
Dickie, I bet you wonder why I asked you to come here today, don't you?
Yes, that has crossed my mind.
Your father has been a friend to our family for many years now. I am not at liberty to explain all to you today, but let me say, he and you are valued by our family and others. I am the last person in our family who should be advising you. Government, politics, business. Those areas I leave to others more suited. I love the arts, I love music, but most of all I love my freedom to do as I please, as long as it does not harm the family. I know you best, so it is left to me to be your consul. Our family was here before there was a United States of America. The family served the king. The family served Washington as he led the revolt against King George. Our family is still serving this nation in all manners. Some serve in government, some in banking, making America prosperous. Some serve as advisors to those who govern. This nation, our United States of America, has been generous and kind to us. It is our duty to continue to guide the nation as it becomes the leader of the world. In the next few years, many changes will come upon this nation. The country will need intelligent, strong people in positions of power to help the nation adjust. We watched you for several years and believe you can be a vital part of the new order to come. Can we all count on you?
I sat there silent, not knowing what to say, still trying to decipher what he said. Dear Lord, I sit in the house of one of the most powerful families in the nation, and he is asking me to help them. Of course, I said. It is also my duty to help this nation and this family that is helping me. Morris, you can count on me now and forever.
We do not need to make a blood oath to that effect, but we can toast to the future. May it exceed our dreams. With that, we drank the last of the port.
Morris, I think I will turn in now. It has been a long, eventful day, and tomorrow I leave for Yale. Having retired to bed, I lay looking out the window, watching the flow of the current in the river, and thought to myself, did I just jump into the water? Nothing is as it seems. I lay in bed for hours and could not sleep. My mind is churning, trying to understand all this. Why was I summoned to this great house? It was not an invitation as I thought back, but a summons to appear. Then it occurred to me why. If Morris met me at any other place, what he had to say would have little effect. It would seem like idle boasting. What if he said this to me at a corner cafe in Wake Forest? It would have no meaning. Here in this palace, it showed authority and power over me. I knew it was meant to intimidate me. That's why I am here tonight. Well, I am intimidated and impressed. Yet I slept with the understanding that at last I realized why I am here. I do not understand why I am off to Yale. That reason I will discover for myself. Nothing is as it seems.